Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
It's 8:32. I'm Debbie Monterey. Welcome to Overtime. Joining us here in Studio B, Charlie Brennan.
Good morning, everybody.
Also, Megan McBride, Democratic strategist with Show Me Victories.
Good morning.
And Amy Markscores.
Good morning.
Are we all enjoying this beautiful weather?
Oh, it's the best.
Yes. Isn't it wonderful?
Sweater weather.
I love it.
I love sweater weather.
It's going to be another beautiful day today, but it's going to get downright cool by the weekend. You may be raking leaves. We'll have to wait and see. Well, topic number one, we'll start with Charlie here. The White House says it will not cooperate with the House impeachment probe, and the administration also blocked the deposition of a U.S. ambassador seen as central to the Ukraine controversy, marking clear battle lines in the fight between President Trump and Democratic lawmakers. The White House counsel sent a letter to congressional Democrats saying the administration would refuse to cooperate with the probe, saying the impeachment inquiry was an effort to overturn the results of the 2016 election. Democrats responded that it was tantamount to obstruction of justice and said, if you don't turn over the documents, is it because you're trying to hide something? So what do you think about the latest developments?
Well, I don't know the legal grounds that the White House is relying on. I think that the Congress does have oversight responsibility, and it has those powers. So there's that. And how do you argue with a subpoena? Don't understand that either. And just to take it one step further, I do believe that the Constitution does not require a vote by the House to go forward with an impeachment inquiry, even though we had one during the Clinton and the Nixon impeachment. So legally, I don't know where the White House stands. Now, beyond that, I think it's just fair to have this process open and transparent. Last week, Ambassador Volker was interviewed, and it was not, open to everybody. And, I thought we all agreed that democracy dies in darkness. So I don't know why these interviews would be not open to the public. And at the same time, I think that the minority party anyway, the Republicans in the House should have subpoena power. So I agree with that. But overall, to your first question, legally, I don't know where the White House is going with this one.
Yeah, I think this is completely a political move on the administration's part. It's not surprising that they're going to stand in the way. I think everyone expected them to do that from the beginning. I think to Charlie's point, they are trying to create a legal battle because they know that that will draw this out and it will take longer for the Democrats to get the information that they need. And I think it's been made pretty clear by Nancy Pelosi and others that they want to get through this. They don't want this to drag out. It's already bad for the country. Let's move through the information. Let's gather the data. Let's talk to folks and let's do something or not. So I'm not surprised that they're taking this way, but I think it's a bad move because every day we see the public saying more and more, okay, well, it looks like there is a reason to have this inquiry. We probably should keep looking at that. And I think the more they fight it and the more public moves in favor of the inquiry, the harder it's going to get for the president.
Amy?
Yeah, impeachment itself is political. It's not a criminal process. It's a political thing. So, of course, this is political, and the Democrats are playing their political games, and Donald Trump is going to continue playing his political games. Now, with the Ukraine rough transcript of the phone call, they delivered those papers up pretty quickly. Now they're delaying and say they're not going to cooperate, and primarily because of the way Pelosi went forward with the impeachment process. As Charlie and Megan mentioned, it's not in the Constitution that you have to have a vote. But when you don't have a vote, you do deny certain abilities and protections and procedures to the White House, to the president, such as, the White House's ability to call witnesses or requiring committee votes on important matters. It also allows Pelosi to split up the inquiry among six committee chairmen versus throwing it all on the judiciary chairman, Nadler. So I can see the White House is saying, all right, if this is the game you're going to play, they're pushing back. I don't think any of this is a surprise. It's not like things have been moving smoothly.
What is fun, though, to watch is the change in the narrative coming from the White House over the weeks, right? First, it was, we did absolutely nothing wrong. This was perfect. This was perfect. Nothing wrong. And then it's, well, now you're bullying us and you're witch hunting us again, but we did nothing wrong, but we don't want you to say anything and stop texting about this and don't put this in writing. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how, as they continue to push back, how that changes the narrative from the beginning of what their original stance was, which was, we did absolutely nothing wrong. You're not behaving like you did nothing wrong.
I think what happened last week around Thursday or Friday when the texts between the diplomats were released, the White House tune changed at that point because it looked like there might have been a quid pro quo either for meetings or armaments in exchange for an investigation of Joe Biden. But as we know, those texts were selectively released, and I think the White House is a good point. Release all the information so we can see if there's more context. And I still, to this day, I don't know why Adam Schiff is not releasing all the information. Transparency is the key, and people will figure this out. And you say, Megan, that you know public opinion is moving against the president. It can shift overnight in the opposite direction. If this is seen as political, if it's seen as an attempt to get rid of the president as opposed to a truth-finding expedition, the American people will definitely start to side with the president.
It is 8:38. We need to take a break. We'll take a look at traffic and weather together. Stay with us here on Overtime on KMOX. All right, one more political topic, and then we're going to go local with something that we're really proud to be on the top of this list,
we're
I tell you.
We're number one.
Yay, we're number one. Okay, Senator Bernie Sanders. He made his first public comments since suffering a heart attack last week. Speaking to reporters outside his Vermont home, Sanders said his busy campaign schedule had left him, he said, more fatigued than I usually have been. And he said, I should have listened to those symptoms. Now, he will be scaling back his campaign. He's not going to hold four rallies in the same day as he did. Now, Megan, Donald Trump is no spring chicken. Bernie Sanders is up there. Joe Biden is up there. So age has been an issue. But now we have Bernie Sanders, who had a heart attack. What do you think is going to happen to his campaign, and how much does this hurt him?
I don't know. I think the people who support Bernie no matter what. And I think what's will or won't hurt him is how he does proceed moving forward. If you're scaling back to, instead of four rallies a day, I'm having one rally a day, that's reasonable. I don't think that really changes a lot of people's perspective. If it really becomes like, where is Bernie and we haven't seen him and it's only his surrogates out and we're really losing him on the public and his energy seems to be down, I think that's a totally different story. So I think it's less of what happened in that one medical instance and how he handles it moving forward that will actually impact his campaign. But when I read he was having four rallies a day anyways, I was like, well, yeah, probably not the greatest idea. Even if you're healthy, you know, it's such a long sprint or a long marathon, mm-hmm. these campaigns, that you can't sprint like that at this point. I mean, you just got to keep your energy about you. So I think it's really going to be the next few weeks to see how he actually handles it.
Well, you know, this happened not quite the same thing, but Bill Bradley in 1999, when he was campaigning for the 2000 race, he did have heart murmurs, and it kind of tarnished his image that he was this, you know, great NBA Hall of Famer, and he was, but he just seemed a little less healthy, and he later said he thought that it did hurt him, his image anyway, and, you know, not his health, but his image took a hit with the voters at that time.
Yeah, and he said he didn't pay attention to the symptoms, so I guess, you know, if you feel the burn, you should probably take action.
Oh.
This might be his last stint as a president.
Oh, no, Amy.
That is bad.
I crack myself up. No, it's not funny. I'm glad he's okay.
Yeah, no, he looked pretty good, those videos of him coming home. I mean, he looked as disheveled and, you know, as ever.
Well,
didn't much change in his outward appearance, at least.
And Megan, you work in politics, and I worked in politics, and I did a pretty grueling gubernatorial campaign. It is exhausting.
It really
is.
It's
like 18 hours a day, and even after that, it's not over.
Well,
it's exhausting.
I have to say, when you brought up Donald Trump and Joe Biden, I was very fortunate to meet Joe Biden last year, and when I saw him, I could not believe how good he looked after being vice president for that. You know, because usually it's like he looked, I was like, he's in better shape than I am. He could outrun me down this block, no problem. So some people, I think, either handle it better than others, but I mean, you can tell when someone's not in the greatest health. I mean, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are not your picture of, you know, aging well, exactly.
All right. We're number one, ladies and gentlemen. We'll find out what we're number one in when we return. It's 8:46 at KMOX. KMOX News Time, 8:51. Debbie Monterey, Amy Marks-Kors, Megan McBride, and Charlie Brennan. All right. This is a list that we typically do tend to top every year, and this year is no exception.
Hey-o.
We're number one in STDs.
Woo!
Yay!
Way to go, St. Louis!
Number one for the rate of gonorrhea. After dropping to third place a year ago, we regained the top spot for chlamydia. Good news, though, we are fourth in syphilis, so we
that
dropped out of
good,
the top three.
Actually.
According to the CDC, St. Louis has led the nation for 2 decades when it comes to sexually transmitted disease. Amy, why are we in this position?
All right.
What's going on?
I know. Well, I mean, this is quite a list. And honestly, you know, we've got the Stanley Cup. The Cardinals have a chance of winning the World Series. And we could have the Stanley Cup, the World Series, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. We just need to get syphilis back. And then, I mean, I don't know if any city has had all five. At any rate, one reason, and it was mentioned in the study, why St. Louis is consistently at the top is most cities incorporate the entire metropolitan area in their statistics.
And so kind of like our crime statistics.
Like our crime statistics. The St. Louis STD number is based on St. Louis City. And if you incorporate the entire metropolitan area, I still think we're pretty high, but you drop to, you know, 16th, 24th, a little bit more respectable, I guess you could say, as far as the STDs go. So that is one reason why St. Louis is at the top. And then, you know, there's poverty, there's education, there's stigma, and all of that is probably wrapped into this.
Well, now, which is it, 16 or 24? And are you including East St. Louis and Metro East
yes,
in those
Yes, you
numbers?
Are including Metro East and St. Louis. And it's like 16 for maybe for gonorrhea and 24 for syphilis. It was like one of, you know what I mean? They were split up. I know that 16 and 24 were two of the numbers. I just don't remember which was the corresponding disease.
You know, still, that's pretty high. How many cities do we have in this country?
Seven. Seven cities. Yes.
No. It's high. She said that with such authority. We have seven cities, Charlie. Seven.
Well, so 16's not so bad.
It doesn't seem, I mean, when you think about where we are with education and what's being taught in school, I mean, is health class even getting taught anymore? I know we've given up on civics, so I wouldn't be surprised if we've given up on basic public health as well, which is obviously having a real impact here. I am a little bit relieved, though, that syphilis is dropping. I mean, that's the one where you can, like, actually become crazy if it goes untreated. So at least, I mean, we're maybe having less crazy people, which could be good for our region. I personally think we could use less crazy people. So
nationwide, it said the syphilis rate was up, I think, 14%. So the fact that it's down in St. Louis,
maybe
I guess
yeah.
we'll take that as a good thing.
Trailblazers.
Yeah.
At least the other ones can be treated. You know, you can treat that
right.
pretty
syphilis is pretty
quickly.
Any other thoughts on STDs, Charlie, or should we move on?
I think we can move on
okay.
safely. Yeah. No, you know, the funny thing is it comes up every year and it's never an issue. We talk about it once a year and mm-hmm. our city leaders, and I'm doing that in quotes, completely ignore the topic. You just don't hear people talking about this. There's been more discussion about Hyperloop, this crazed pod going from St. Louis to Kansas City in 30 minutes than there is on a real issue that affects real people.
Well, maybe if we put in the Hyperloop and you get in the pod and you get shot to Kansas mm-hmm. City, we're like, this is how sexually transmitted diseases are spread. This is an illustration.
And new educational effort.
One of the reasons the CDC cited in their numbers was that they said the rise in sexually transmitted diseases across the nation coincided with the closure of public health clinics.
Yeah.
As well, so that people who don't have money are not maybe getting the education
that,
or the treatment.
But look, it's just too darn difficult to get on Medicaid in the state of Missouri. I mean, if you make more than $3,000 for a family of three, you're off. That's just ridiculous.
How do you make $3,000 a year with a family of three?
Right,
and
right.
live? Well, you could afford, well, probably not, but that would buy you XFL season tickets. So from STDs to the XFL. The Battlehawks are going to play 5 home games at the Dome at America Center. And the lower level season tickets start at $20 a game. So that sounds pretty affordable. So Battlehawks season ticket packages range from $100 to $450 per seat for the 5 home games. Megan McBride, at that price point, do you think they're going to be able to draw butts in seats?
I mean, my first question, I'm so ignorant about this, is XFL the same as regular football, just a different league, or is it like got some wild component to it? Do you know, like, right. But is it the same game? Like, you play the same traditional football game?
I believe so.
Okay. Well, then I'm sure
there's. It used to be different, but now I think it's.
Yeah. Then I think there's probably quite a lot of people who miss being able to go out and watch football and who will be interested at that price to be able to go to the Dome and watch some folks beat each other up.
Yeah, it starts the Sunday after the Super Bowl, downtown St. Louis.
And if it's a feeder league for the NFL, as they're hoping, then yes, I think there's some potential.
I hope they're successful.
Yeah, I'll go. I'll go to a game. Absolutely. All right, well, here's what's on tap, and it's sponsored for you by Midwest Money.
Well, we have a St. Louis woman who's one of the fastest marathoners in the country set to join us. Plus, Leonard Slatkin's back at Powell Hall. We'll be talking to him.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.